APP that our executive authority has signed that APP. So we have now taken into account the new political developments, and we believe we are on track to ensuring that we assist government in meeting the priorities. We will also take into account the new medium-term strategic framework. So, Chair, we will be taking the committee through the following: our mandate, as spelled out in our legislation. We'll take the committee through the outcomes that we reach as we do our investigation. We also thought it appropriate to take the committee through the case for change, because we embarked on a organizational change, reorganization, organizing ourselves for better performance. We also will take the committee through the new value chain, which is really the core business process. We'll also take the committee through the governance improvement, operational performance and information and the improvements that we have seen in that operational space. We also talk about the international work that we assist government in meeting international obligations. We also position ourselves within the wider anti-corruption framework of government, which is carried out through the anti-corruption task team work. And then we go into the APP and the targets, programs and the MTEF plans. We take the committee through the risk management. You see at the end of the APP, there's also links to other plans, which is specifically part C of the APP. There's Annexure A, which is the addendum, and it also addendum to the strategic plan of 2015 to 2020. And then there's Annexure B, which has the technical performance indicator descriptions. Straight to our mandate, Chairperson and honorable members, you'll see that it's spelled out in detail in page 39 of the APP. We derive our mandate from the legislation titled Special Investigating Units and Special Tribunals Act. The current Special Investigating Unit was established by Proclamation Number R118 of 2001. And there hasn't been any other Special Investigating Unit that was established. The SIU is a public entity in terms of Public Finance Management Act, and we conduct investigations that have been mandated by proclamation signed by the President. And once the investigation is complete, we then refer the final report to the President. We've got our vision, which we say we would like SIU to be the state's preferred and trusted forensic investigation and litigation agency. Chairperson and honorable members, we do realize that to be trusted, there's quite a number of building blocks that we had to put in place so that we are top of mind for every executive authority or accounting authority when there's allegations of maladministration, corruption and malpractice that needs to be investigated. And this current APP also continues on that improvement plan to make sure that we are positioned appropriately to investigate. We've got functions that are spelled out in our legislation, and specifically in Section 4 of our legislation. We will not go through that in detail. And we've got the SIU powers that are applicable to every law enforcement agency, the powers to subpoena, search and seizure, and to interrogate or question witnesses under oath, and so on. Of importance is the power to institute civil litigation. And the civil litigation is instituted to ensure that we recover those monies that would have been lost by state institutions so that we return that money back to the fiscus. Out of our mandate is the power to prosecute. That power is left to our colleagues in the NPA. We make referrals to the NPA when there's criminal evidence. And when we investigate, we do then refer disciplinary actions. and we work closely with other law enforcement agencies. Those being the powers within which we operate, we would like to then take the committee through. When we investigate, we do reach some of the critical outcomes, and this is what defines our work and the impact of our work. You'll see, Chairperson and Honorable Members, there's a mention of these outcomes on page 14 specifically of the Annual Performance Plan, but these outcomes are as follows. As projected on the screen, the first one is that when we investigate, taking an example of allegations of procurement irregularities, we then investigate. If we find that the procurement process was irregular and that a specific contract was awarded irregularly, we then, in terms of our legislation, institute process of civil litigation. And that's the civil litigation part on the left. This is the process that says we issue summonses against any party that would have been responsible, and the main intention would be to set aside any administrative decision that was taken by the state institution, either to award the contract and to set aside the contract. And then the major part of the process is to also get an order to return the money or assets that would have been lost to the state. We then also refer. We'll come back again to this outcomes. We talk specifically about the special tribunal when we talk about the civil litigation part later on. We also refer disciplinary referrals to the accounting authorities. These we expect, based on the evidence that we would have referred to the accounting authorities, we expect that they would institute disciplinary process based on the findings that we would have come to. And this is part of ensuring that there's consequence management and holding everyone who is accountable, to hold them responsible and accountable. We also make findings of criminal evidence. When we find that there is a criminal act committed, we then take the evidence in terms of our legislation, we refer it to the National Prosecuting Authority. We will again come back to that part and indicate what is the some of the activities that we are doing with the NPA. We also refer to other regulatory authorities, be it the South African Revenue Service or Financial Intelligence Center or any other regulatory authority that would assist either with the outcomes that we have reached. The bottom bar refers to systemic recommendations. As we investigate, we come across some of the inefficiencies in the processes or people or systems. We then put together recommendations of what the state institution has to improve on, either in the business processes so that they can take it into account in their risk management processes. And this is really meant to ensure that there's improvement and we avoid all those acts of maladministration or corruption or malpractice going forward. We will now go briefly into the case for change. We'll revisit these outcomes again and just indicate the kind of activities that we are busy on issue. When we started the change in the organization, which was around 2016-2017, and that was after we have observed a number of inefficiencies and areas that needed to be improved. Part of what we have documented in this slide is that we have found that the SIU financial model is unsustainable. We'll come back to what we have done in that regard. We have also found that there's poor turnaround times, either in the investigations, which is the main. We have found that at that time, our finding was that there's investigations that were long on our books, that took long, more than 5 years, 7 years, and we realized that this doesn't augur well for an organization like SIU. It may visit SIU with reputational risk. We have put in place processes to ensure that we turn that situation around. We also established that the information and communication technology environment was not sustainable. We have got plans in this APP that we have put in place to make sure that we improve that situation. We also found at the time that there was inadequate individual and organizational performance management system. In this regard, there was and there is performance management system, but it's inadequate in terms of measuring the input and measuring the output. So we are on track in ensuring that everyone in the organization completes a business plan. From the business units, every executive is expected to complete a business operational plan, and those operational plans should then input into the individual performance management agreements. So we expect that from everyone so that we are able to measure performance appropriately. On the spectrum of the our wider anti-corruption space, as we know that our country adopts a multi-agency approach, but we have found that there is some areas where there could be duplication, there could be areas of overlap, but it's up to us to ensure that we manage those appropriately so that those overlaps do not create problems. We at the time also found that there was a lack of engagement between the special investigating unit at the time and with the state institutions that we investigated, in the sense that we would not go back and give them update of where we are, despite the fact that we ultimately issue a report to the president, but we really appreciated that the state institutions needed to know where we are at any particular point in time. And that also has been improved, and we can see that it augurs well in terms of state institutions knowing where we are, and it helps to unlock the payments that we expect from the state institutions. So that being the case for change, in brief, the areas that we needed to change, we said, what then are the strategic focus areas that we need to include in our strategic plan? The next slide focuses then on the overview of the strategic focus. And that, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, you would see that it features on page 27 and 28 of the annual performance plan. But we have summarized a bit in terms of focus areas. We said our strategic focus is to achieve appropriate legal outcomes against perpetrators of maladministration, malpractice, and corruption, and influence proactively the part that I mentioned earlier on, systemic improvements. We would like to make sure that we also input and contribute in corruption prevention, which is part of the new value chain that we have implemented. And we also want to make sure that we contribute to addressing behavioral root causes of administrative irregularities and corruption. This is the prevention part. The reactive part is the part that we believe we also do well, but we want to do well on the prevention side. So the strategic focus, Honorable Chair and Members, is that this year's APP outlines specific initiatives and activities for the SIU to become more proactive and to ensure greater preventive measures which address the causes of maladministration, malpractice, and corruption. In order to achieve this, we have said to ourselves the following needs to be addressed as focus areas. We needed to define the SIU value chain. We'll come to that one. We have to accelerate the conversion of allegations into proclamation. It is important to note, and we have gone out and did some survey to the stakeholders, it is important that the public should know where to report corruption, and when they've reported it, that those allegations would be assessed as speedily as possible within time frames that we've put for ourselves in our standard operating procedures, and they are processed as quickly as is possible because our legislation requires us to follow the proclamation process. That is a critical process that needs to be addressed, because the sooner we turn and accelerate their conversion into proclamation is the sooner we address the allegations. We said we need to establish capacity for corruption, maladministration, and malpractice prevention through public education, data analytics, and scenario analysis. Another important part is to monitor and evaluate the impact of SIU objectives, standardize the manner in which cases are scoped through standard operating procedures, which we have put in place, improve the quality and turnaround of investigations. This is such a key part that we really make sure that investigations are turned around as quickly as possible, and the underlying observation is that we should not affect the quality of the investigations while we turn around as quickly as possible. Expand on the monitoring and evaluation of case management, including a central case registration system. Ensure the long-term financial stability of SIU by revisiting the financial model. We'll talk again about that. Create a public sector data intelligence area. Create advisory capacity to prevent the reoccurrence of corruption, maladministration, and malpractice. We also, it's important that we monitor the implementation of the SIU remedial action. Whilst we have indicated to the Honorable Committee all of those outcomes that we reach when we investigate, we want to create measures to follow up and ensure that those referrals are acted upon. We in this year, would like to, and this is part of what we've been setting ourselves to do, we are busy with the relevant and necessary amendments to our legislation, which we will put through the legislative process, and surely this committee will come to be appraised of those required amendments. And we said we would need to improve on the governance. So this is, in brief, just the strategic focus area. We have also said to ourselves, as we look at the processes, we could not apply the old thinking in terms of addressing the new eras. We have to build for the right paradigm so that the trajectory to follow is to ensure that we make the impact, and we have to apply new models to the era and the issue around data, which we will come back to. The next slide, Chair, I really would not spend a lot of time on it. It's really just, it's busy with a very focused message. At the top is this is a snapshot of the strategic focus and what needs to be done. If there's evidence that shows corruption has been committed, we have to make sure that we process it appropriately. In the middle, at the top, we take into account our 2030 vision, which is spelled out in the NDP. We'll come back to that. And in the middle is what is it that we aspire to become. We aspire to become the trusted and the go-to agency when it comes to the investigation of corruption. And as we go on in the middle is again around our value chain. At the bottom, we said our strategic roadmap for 1920 includes this APP, and in the middle at the bottom is that we would also like to see culture improvement. We would like a culture of integrity, ethical leadership. We would like the culture of improved performance. At the bottom, at the extreme right, is what we will do to ensure that we reach that process. I'll page on, Chairperson, to say we now go into the value chain. This is the core business process that we have defined, that if we follow this business process, we should do our business appropriately and effectively. You'll see if in the APP, page 14 of the APP, and it also referred to in page 27 of the APP. The value chain, it's really as follows, that we would receive the allegations. We receive the allegations from whistleblowers, from state departments, from various areas. Once we receive them, we ensure that they are properly registered. And then we do the feasibility in terms of ensuring that they fall within our scope, our act, our legislation, we scope, and we ensure that the proclamation is properly scoped, and we then push the proclamation through the process. While we do that, we also plan the investigation, and once the proclamation is issued, we then conduct the investigation. I did indicate that those outcomes, which are effectively some of the remedial actions that we meet, and then we do the reporting to the president, and afterwards we evaluate the investigation. Lessons learned, where have we faltered, what have been the improvement areas, and then we would like to play in the prevention of the reoccurrence, and ultimately on an ongoing basis monitor the remedial action. At the bottom is the functional areas that we have identified that are required to support the business process. Case registration and monitoring, case assessment, case management, forensic legal assessment, investigation functionality, civil litigation, forensic analysis, market data analytics, which we'll come back to, prevention and advisory services. The next two slides, Chairperson and honorable members, it's value chain in detail with the touch points that we have identified for ourselves that we need to improve on. If I just do the snapshots, it's again emphasizing the importance, the notes on the left-hand side. All allegations should be controlled and monitored. The process of taking the allegation through so that it's not lost in the process. We want to increase the number of allegations that are converted into cases or into proclamations, and the new targeted capacity to educate the public. At the top is still the value chain that I've described in the previous slide. I will not repeat that. The next slide is the notes on the right hand side. We would like to, as we implement this new value chain, would like to monitor the SIU impact, and that impact can only be measured by how effective our remedial actions are implemented, how effective are we in the investigations. Total transformation in scoping of cases, improve the quality and turnaround times of investigations, expand monitoring and evaluation of case management, create and publish sector intelligence, and then create the advisory capacity to prevent reoccurrence. So that's the note in the middle, Chairperson, that really just indicates some of the focus areas that we will monitor as we implement the new value chain. The next slide is that as we implement the new value chain and the new strategy, we needed to define the operating model. What is it that will be the model which we take in terms of our investigations. In brief, the model really defines that we needed to have a clear focus on the national cases, you can see at the top on the left-hand side, and we needed to define what is this support that we need to give to the organization. We'll come back to that as we get into the APP. These are the enablement functions, colloquially referred to as support services. And we had to also define the regional, what we now refer to officially as provincial structures and provincial cases. So the notes on the left-hand side just redefine what I've said. We want to make sure that we ring-fence units for the national cases, standardize the quality of service delivery, and on the right-hand side, we said we would like to empower the provinces in doing their work, because where the cases are reported should be the areas where they are really investigated. And that operating model is referred to again in page 14 of the annual performance plan. Honorable Chair and honorable members, as we do all this, we require a sound and effective governance model. And the governance model is premised on ensuring that the governance structure is clearly defined, the processes are known, in the organization so that the decision-making process is clear and spelled out. The governance model is also premised on the kind of leadership that we require. We require ethical leadership, effective governance process and structures, clearly defined decision-making process, clearly defined issue resolution process. Issues will continue to be raised, whether internally or externally, but those issues have to be subjected to the appropriate legal process. We want to ensure that there's clear governance structures to monitor our environment. The next slide, which we will find on page 29 of the APP, is the structure that we have defined following the new strategy that we have penned down. And as they would say, structure follows strategy. We are of the view that this is the structure that would support the and help us carry out our new strategy. As we report, you'll see clearly that on the left-hand side, we have sought to spell out the provincial structures. We are currently in all the provinces except Northern Cape. But we are in the process because we have engaged the leadership in the province. There's a view. We service that province from Bloemfontein, from our Free State office. And we found that there's a bit of lack in some instances to ensure that we address. But also, we want to make sure that our people can reach us in all the provinces. So we are in the process of ensuring that we do feasibility studies, we can establish our presence in that province as well. We are going to report later on that all the positions in these structures have been identified, but they will not all be filled in this financial year simply because of financial constraints, but we've got a plan that we will show to the committee on how are we going to fill those positions. The next slides, which I will go through fairly quickly, are the slides that really addresses this governance model. And we want to stick to this model so that we are, and all of this that I've said, including the value chain, they are all a subject of audit. And, in this current audit that's underway by the Auditor General, he's also auditing this new value chain and see the extent to which we have implemented it. In this governance role, as I said, we define the governance roles. We spell out the accountabilities that the top two areas. We want to ensure that on the bottom left, coordinating mechanisms are spelled out and understood by everyone. Of importance, performance management system. We would like to make sure that we define our performance management system so that it's understood by everyone. Everyone understands what's expected of him or her and what is it that they need to deliver. In the middle, with then showed the Honorable Committee the structure that we have come to. The next slides really indicate what are those committees. We've got the advisory, what we call advisory committees, the audit committee, which is spelled out in the Public Finance Management Act. We've got that committee is in place. We have also established the risk management committee. We also have the IT committee and the human capital committee, which is the human resources committee. All of those are chaired by independent chairpersons so that they can really hold us accountable and advise us appropriately. The internal governance structures, we've got the executive committee, we've got the MENCO, which includes some of the wider management in the provinces, and we've got the operations management meeting, which looks at the operations of the company, of the organization, to ensure that we always understand what's the status of each and every investigation, and we then ensure that we support the investigators where there's shortcomings and where there's a need for more resources or more tools of work. We then ensure that all of those investigations are monitored. We are now going to introduce functional business unit regional meetings. We would like to ensure, as much as we want to ensure that the provinces and the business unit are empowered. We would like them to do what they are supposed to do. We would like them to manage. We would like them to ensure that where the issues are addressed appropriately and on time, and we would like to a demonstration that these meetings are happening. We are going to log minutes of these meetings so that they are auditable. And we can see that the organization is really being managed according to the governance process. The other governance structure that we have is the case assessment committee in terms of assessing the new allegations, the timelines that have been defined in terms of the standard operating procedure, and those standards are adhered to, and ultimately that case management sends out a decision which goes out to the head of the unit, signed off into the proclamation process, and signed off appropriately. We've got the policy committee in terms of ensuring that all of the committees, all of the policies in the organization are defined and reviewed as times require. We've got a governance committee that we have put in place to review the state capture matters. And those state capture matters, starting from the Musasa matter that made the headlines in the public when the process started, we've engaged with the NPA, so they will attest to that when they appear. We are certain at this stage that some of those actions that had not been actioned that time back are now receiving appropriate attention. But part of what we are doing, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, is that we, based on what comes out of the State Capture Commission, if there's evidence of matter that requires us to then subject them to that business process, scope the process, understand the evidence, and make sure that if there's a need to put them through the proclamation, we do that. There's a few of them that we are busy with at the moment. And we've got what we call National Project Review Board. This approach we have taken because some of the strategic matters, call it those matters that really attract public interest, like the SOEs and the others, the national departments, we've created a special governance process to monitor those. We've got the pre-proclamation planning committee. We want to make sure that when we plan the proclamation, we understand what will be the outreach, the scope, the impact. We now want to understand the budgetary implications upfront. And then we've got the loss control committee, which looks at the losses in the organization, starting from either people losses or some of the losses in the finance space or some of the losses that would have been caused by our employees, including ourselves around the table. We need to make sure that we understand the causes of those losses, what is it that we are doing to prevent them, and if there has been any misconduct or any conduct that requires to be addressed, let's address that. And then we've got the Human Capital Subcommittee on Skills Development and Employment Equity, because it's something we are reporting on the numbers later on in our presentation. That is the governance structure and the governance environment of the organization. As we started with this, with the improvements, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we have said we want to improve governance process, financial management, all the process, people issues and systems issues, and all of those have been subjected to audit. We are today reporting that as we started, we've seen the results of this. For 2016-2017, we returned a clean audit with a few areas that we needed to improve on. And 2017-2018, also the clean audit was returned. This gives us comfort that we are on a trajectory that we have set ourselves to improve the processes in the organization. The current audit is underway. We believe that we will return a clean audit again. We would like to now move over to the performance information. And this is the part, it's also included in the current APP. If you look at page 24 of the APP, it spells out some of this performance information. When we started around 2016 with the new changes and having identified the inefficiencies and some of the areas that we needed to improve. Slide number 25 indicates where we were on 2015-2016. On that financial year, we met only two targets, and the rest of the targets were not met. And then that was the time when we were beginning to say, no, things need to improve. The next financial year, after we've implemented all of those processes, we started seeing the improvements. And in the financial year 2016-2017, we met all the targets but two. And those two are the ones, unfortunately, that make the headlines. Once we've reported, and as we report on the annual report, it's actual recoveries. What is it that has been recovered? And the other one is the value of money on assets potentially recoverable. Those are the areas which we did not make at the time. And we set ourselves and said, given the projects that we have, what is it that we can really focus at? But again, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, some of the outputs that we reach are also equally important. If you look at below, value of matters in respect of which evidence was referred to institute civil litigation, which we will talk to later on, and some of those value of contracts which have been set aside or deemed invalid, which ranges into the 4 billion. So this was 2016-2017. We then flip over to the next financial year. In the next financial year, we achieve all targets but one this time round. And this time round was the actual value of money and assets recovered. That target kept on eluding us, but we went back as managers and leaders and said, what is it that needs to work? Where do we need to tighten? But most of this, one of the contributors was the delay in the civil litigation process, which is currently being addressed by the establishment of the special tribunal, which we will again report on. But Chair, this is the extent to which we have audited performance management information. The next slide, we put it in the pack. It's still subject to audit. We will report on it once audited when we present the annual report. But all indications, Chair, are that we would have met all the targets this time round. And we want to believe that it's because of all of those efforts that we have put in place and ensure that we improve. The next slide, the Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, just indicates the kind of work. As we started with the change, We made some of the assumptions. When you develop a strategy, there's some assumptions that you take into account. And we said, if we are to do all this that we want to do, improve turnaround times, improve quality, resource ourselves appropriately, address the public reports on corruption, address them appropriately on time, we are likely to see the improvement and the uptake in the reports of the corruption allegation. And the slide in front of the Honorable Committee attests to that. We just took the last five-year view from 2015-2016 to 2019-20. If you can see year-on-year comparison, in 2015-16, we only had five proclamations that were issued and published in that year. There in 2016-17, 2017-18, we had 18, 2018-2019, we had 24. In this financial year, we had 18 proclamations that have been signed. That yellow, there's a legend at the bottom, proclamation signed, and the black part at the top is the projections. We are projecting, based on the processes of proclamation that we have seen, we are projecting that further nine proclamations will be signed off. But here, because we had already sent this presentation last week Friday, the 5th of July, the president already signed 7 more proclamations. And those proclamations were gazetted on Friday. Just to, in brief, take the Honorable Committee through, is the amendment of the proclamation into water and sanitation. We've got an ongoing investigation into that space. We wanted an amendment so that we can include a certain scope that the whistleblowers came to us on. And that proclamation has now been signed and published. We've got another one on National Department of Water and Sanitation. And we've got the amendment to the proclamation on Northwest, on the public works, roads and transport. We've got also a proclamation that has been signed based on the allegations we received in the private medical health, and those impact on the Council for Medical Schemes. Remember, our business only focuses on state institutions. Council for Medical Schemes is a state institution. Allegations were reported impacting on Council for Medical Aid Scheme. But as we assess those allegations will lead us into the private medical aid space. So this is a clear demonstration against the belief that we only focus on the public sector. We are seriously going to focus on the private sector as well, as we have been doing over time. But this gives us the opportunity to also look into the allegations in this space. There's also a proclamation signed on the Northwest Development Corporation. We've got a proclamation signed and published on DINEL. And this is the state-owned entity that will be part of ensuring that we play a part in the improvement of the state-owned entity. We've got a proclamation on the Department of Justice and the IDT, and this relates to the building of the courts. There's allegations that were referred to by the department. I think it's important to know that the department referred these allegations to us, and we will be looking at those. But the next slide, Chair, I won't spend time on them because I've already touched on the outcomes. These are the outcomes of our investigations. We've just detailed some of the numbers so that the Honourable Committee can see. And again, we've just taken a snapshot of the last 5-year view. As we investigate and we find evidence of criminality, we refer to NPA. As you can see, all of those years, 2014-15, we referred 171, 15-16, 307, 16-17, 108, 17-18, 148, 18-19, 331. For those 5 years, as I counted, the total is about 1,065 for the past 5 years. But Chair, what are we doing to ensure that all of those matters, because part of our new strategy in our value chain, we call it at the end, is to monitor the referrals. We have engaged MPA. We have got a memorandum of understanding that we've signed with them, and we are currently in engagement. Even with the National Director of Public Prosecution, and we are satisfied with the process that is underway to ensure that our referrals are acted upon. We do take into account, yes, that they have to go through our referrals, but we're saying we need to know whether there's a decision to prosecute or not to prosecute. So that when there's a decision not to prosecute, we should understand what is the reason why there's no prosecution. Have we not collected all the required evidence, or what is it that we could improve? So, Chair, what we are saying on the slide 31 is that engagements are going on in order to follow up an action on our referrals. The MOU has been signed with NPA, and we are in the process of reviewing it with the National Director of Public Prosecution. As late as yesterday, we met with some of the senior members of NPA to understand what is the list that we have referred to them. We compare the list, we reconcile, and we want to understand what is the status of each case. So we are satisfied with the process that they have put in place to ensure that they action our matters. and we are in the process also. Not that other matters are not important, but we are prioritizing some of the cases that we need to see action on, and that prioritization is ongoing. The next slide is the referral of the disciplinary process. I think here we need to just explain that the spike on 2014-15 was as a result of our investigation into Eskom at the time. There was an investigation in Eskom, and there was a whole lot of conflict of interest matters. I think we referred almost about 3,000 matters of conflict of interest at that time. So that hence the spike of the referrals. And as we went along, we have referred all of those matters to the state institutions. What are we doing to make sure that these matters are acted upon? Because we have realized that, you know, there's sometimes a lack or just inaction in terms of action in these matters. We are ensuring that there's consequence management at all levels. At this stage, when we engaged with the presidency, the president has made a decision, it was out there in the public, to release all the SIU presidential reports to the executive authorities and to the accounting authorities. And the rationale for releasing those reports is firstly for the state institutions to know what is it that SIU has done and investigated, but of importance is to establish what has been done in terms of implementing all of those referrals, be it disciplinary, be it prosecutions. And we are currently in engagement with the presidency. We will see what the feedback from the state institutions has been. As we indicate, feedback is required regarding the implementation of the SIU referrals. The civil litigations. Civil litigations, also the numbers are indicated there in terms of value of the litigation, of the matters at hand. Again, we have seen that in the ordinary courts, there's measure of delay in terms of executing on our civil litigation. But as we indicated, the next slide just indicates what is it that we are doing to improve that space. We are happy to report to the committee that we were happy to see that the president signed on the proclamation to reestablish the special tribunal. The tribunal president has been appointed, and various judges from various divisions. And up to date, and the Department of Justice is the one that's accountable to ensuring that the logistics are attended to and the court is ultimately established and up and running. Our information up to now is that the seat of the special tribunal has been identified, the regulations have been worked on, and the rules of practice also have been worked on. We anticipate that the tribunal will be functional on or before October, it's dependent on some of those logistical arrangements on the part of the Department of Justice. We've quantified the matters on hand and in various courts that are pending, that the value of those civil litigation matters counts up to 14.7 billion. We believe that when the special tribunal is set up, we will start seeing that process really gaining traction, and we can ultimately then recover the monies that have been lost to corruption or maladministration and malpractice. And we are also considering that as part of this special tribunal, because in terms of the legislation, it only adjudicates on matters that emanate from the special investigation unit investigations, but we would like to make sure that even the asset forfeiture unit is able to take its matters there. We are subject to some of the legal processes that will be put in place, but it is our hope that we should be able to address that, because it will also speed up the recovery and the seizure of assets in that space. So we'll, the regulations and the rules will possibly allow for that. Chair, we thought it appropriate that we also include this important work that we do. And it's covered in the APP. I think if we read on page 36, there's a reference to the 36 of the APP, there's a reference to the international work that we do. Just in brief, this international work that we do is really to ensure that we contribute to the country's compliance with international obligations. We participate in all of those structures, African Union Anti-Corruption Working Group, SADC Anti-Corruption Working Group, Commonwealth Africa Heads of Anti-Corruption Agencies, Commonwealth Secretariat on Anti-Corruption. We participate in the BRICS Anti-Corruption Working Group, G20, United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, United Nations Conventions on Anti-Corruption Implementation Working Group. And from time to time, there are initiatives in the African continent and international anti-corruption initiatives where we are invited. In this space, the line at the bottom is that we work in conjunction and in collaboration with other spheres of government and other departments and other agencies, in particular the Department of Public Service and Administration, Department of International Relations and Cooperation, and our colleagues in the Anti-Corruption Task Team. Now, talking Anti-Corruption Task Team, there's also a lot of work that is included in the APP on our role that we play in the wider anti-corruption space, which is epitomized in the Anti-Corruption Task Team. What do we do? Firstly, we participate in the anti-corruption committees. There's a program of that anti-corruption task team that has been executed. We are responsible for program 4 of that wider program. But another important key initiative is that there is the development of the national anti-corruption strategy that is being championed by the ACTT. As part of the APP at the end, I think it's the Annex C or Part C of the APP. We make reference to the CARA funding. CARA funding that we have included in the APP. That CARA funding is managed through SIU. We have distributed it to various entities. Right. What do we do in the Program 4? Program 4 mainly includes the risk-based assessment of vulnerable sectors in the public sector. We do vulnerable sector assessment. We identify proactive interventions. We refer matters for investigation and also for civil litigation. The next slide, which is diagrammatic, it shows some of the vulnerable sectors that we have identified in the anti-corruption task team. We put together a team that did this assessment, and we've come out with all of those sectors there. All of them are important. All of them have to be acted on. But we have said, as part of the blueprint, let us prioritize some of them and see how this method would work. We've prioritized health, construction, and SOEs. And we have put in place measures to ensure that we execute in those spaces. In terms of health, we've created the Health Anti-Corruption Forum, where even NGOs, Corruption Watch, Section 27, all the members of ACTT participate. Most, you see in some of the reports that most of the public report matters to Corruption Watch, and they, when appropriate, also refer those matters to us. So, Chair, this is part of the work that we are doing, and it consumes a lot of our resources and time. But we are beginning to see the results. The next slide is really just an example of some of the matters that are going on in this prioritized sector. It's not the whole list. The next slide is just some of the proclamations that we have on our site. You may have some of the investigations going on in the DPCI side, some of the investigations going on elsewhere. But in this prioritized sectors, you see that in the SOE space, we've mentioned an example around ESCOM, South African Broadcasting Corporation, CETA, and also in the health space, there's already referrals that we've seen that led to a proclamation on National Health Laboratory Services, Gauteng Provincial Health, this is the Mental Health Care Facilities, Health Professions Council, and I've reported earlier that we have seen a proclamation in the CMS, which is the Council for Medical Schemes. This is some of the matters that are going on in these prioritized sectors. We would like to continue to ensure that there's results, and we've just made a snippet of some of those outcomes that are there. This will be covered when we report on our performance, which is will be in the annual report. But we thought we do a snapshot of what is it that's happening in this. Now, we go now into the performance annual performance plan review. Without repeating, we've already mentioned our vision. We've already indicated to our vision, and we also conduct our work based on some of the values that we have identified. Those values are clearly indicated on the slide: independence, cooperation, teamwork, integrity, drive and passion, professionalism and efficiency. Our APP is premised on the strategy that we have implemented and what is it that we need to do. On that slide, we are focused on the enablement functions. We want to enable core services to perform optimally. That is in the program one in the APP. Number two, we want to achieve appropriate legal outcomes against perpetrators of maladministration and corruption. That is in program two. We would like to influence proactively the systemic and behavioral root causes. That is in program three. And this is the area which we would like to make sure that we play part in the prevention side. What is it that we would like to do to enable core business? We'd like to provide a compliant and sustainable financial services in accordance with service delivery standards. This is the compliance function. Attract skilled workforce, our human capital plan. We'll have to make sure that we attract skilled workforce. We want to provide appropriate information communication technology services. That our chief information officer is included in her plans. We want to collaborate effectively with stakeholders. We want to provide support for strategic and organizational performance. We want to protect the SIU from potential legal risks. We want to protect SIU's integrity from internal and external threats, assess internal controls through internal audits, enable the unit to become risk intelligent. Right. And then on the core business, to achieve legal outcomes, we want to ensure that each and every case is reported, centrally reported and monitored to ensure that each allegation is assessed and in accordance with standard criteria. We want to conduct forensic investigations according to predetermined standards, to initiate the implementation of legal recommendations, and to increase legal outcomes based on civil and other proceedings. The other proactive part, which is then on the prevention side. We want to direct internal and influence external strategic decision making. This is related to state institutions. We would like to make sure that we contribute based on the information that we have, the data analytics that we do, play it back to the state institutions, indicate to them what are the exposures, so that they can improve control, risk management, and planning. We want to assist state institutions with the prevention in the reoccurrence and to increase public awareness about targeted anti-corruption behavior. Chair, when we do our APP, and it's included in so many ways in the APP, we will not spend a lot of time because we need to go into the targets. We did situational analysis. Chair, we are awake, we are aware that the world is changing around us, and we have to change with it and understand the changes and build for those changes. We have to continually understand the existential requirements. What is it that we need to do to make sure that we continue to exist and remain relevant. Remaining relevant means making the impact that the public requires. When we started on this change, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, we realized that this may lead to some disruption in the business, but we made sure that we put our eye on the business. This led to self-disruption and making sure that we challenge ourselves. Those were just the introductory notes. On the next slide, on page 46, we benchmarked ourselves, and it spelled out in so many ways in the APP. We benchmarked ourselves so that we understand what the world is doing. As we say, that we want to understand where the world is going, how the world is changing, how to build for this change. We benchmarked with those entities in the world that are viewed as best. Hong Kong Anti-Corruption Agency is viewed as one of the best, and in the National Development Plan actually is referred to as one of the best models to learn from. And we've been privileged and welcomed to do the learning there. Some of the learnings we've implemented along the value chain, central case registration, and all of that. So we are delighted that we're able to learn from there. And then we also learned from the Singapore model. So we believe that we have positioned ourselves in line with the international benchmark to ensure that we position ourselves for performance. The next slide really just says we looked at the economic outlook. Without going into detail, we understood the impact of corruption. What is it that it causes government and the public? We then said again we want to make sure that we play a role in improving. One of the goals, the five goals that the State of the Nation spelled out by the President is the economic growth. So we would like to make sure that we position ourselves in terms of making sure that we contribute to that. The last two bullet points still repeat that we would like to improve turnaround times of SIU investigations and the implementation of remedial action and consequence management. Again, the next slide is really the continuation of the economic outlook so that we understand what various forums in the world are saying, how are they rating the country, and how is it that we can position ourselves appropriately. We refer there to one of the studies, World Economic Forum Global Competitiveness Report. It's got various elements in there. We've understood what those elements are. Then we've seen how is it that our country has been rated. But we want to understand and make sure that we put in place measures to improve the ranking. Those are included in page 17 or page 15 of the APP. The next slide, we also look at the Corruption Perception Index. This is carried out by Transparency International. It's got its local chapter in South Africa, which is Corruption Watch. We would like to understand what is it that this index places emphasis on, so that we can assist in putting place measures to improve our country's rating and our country's scoring. The next page clearly indicates that in 2017-18, our country scored 43, which was about two notches down. And we have to understand what is it that drives this scoring so that we can position our anti-corruption measures to contribute to the improvement of the scoring and the ranking. In this regard, we have been in touch with Transparency International. They have pointed us to their local chapter, which is Corruption Watch. Yes, we are engaged in engagement. We'll continue to engage with Corruption Watch. We are setting up a continuous interaction with them so that we can see what are the collaboration points. The next few slides is really just the steps that we take into account. We've looked at what Corruption Watch produces as steps. And we want to understand those steps, some of the cases that are reported to them, and how is it that it matches or measures to some of the proclamations we have or some of the reports that have been reported. You'll see there that's in page 22 of the APP, and there's a national landscape that is shown there, local, national, provincial, and private. So this has informed us on how do we put in place the APP. We've also looked at what the SAPS reports on in terms of the crime statistics that are published. The next slide, we've also looked at what the Auditor General's reports are saying, because those are some of the indicators that we need to look at. The extent of the irregular expenditure reports that are issued by the Auditor General could be indicators that there's maladministration, malpractice, or even corruption in those spaces. We are mindful that irregular expenditure does not automatically translate into corruption or maladministration. But in many instances, our evidence has shown that failure to follow process, which is really an irregularity, in many instances we've found that there's underlying evidence of malpractice, corruption, and so on. So we look into those reports, and if there are areas which we need to investigate on, we then investigate. We've also looked at the diagnostic report, which was produced as we did the National Anti-Corruption Strategy. There's yet another entity that we also look at and engage with, which is the Public Service Commission. That focuses on the investigations in the public service space. We also look at the data that they produce, and it informs our view of how is it that we move forward. The next slide, as we indicated, without repeating what sits in the NDP, we also look at the provisions of the National Development Plan, because we are positioned in the context of ensuring that government reaches the 2030 vision of the NDP. And the 2030 vision is spelled out on slide number 58. We have bolded some of the wording there, so we'll not go into detail with that. Slide number 59, we've already indicated that there's ICT improvements that we bring on. We'll not go into detail with that. The next slide, Chairperson and Honourable Members, we've done stakeholder survey. These are the stakeholders in which we investigate. In the interest of time, we'll not go through each and every slide, but you'll see each slide has got a question that was raised with the stakeholders, and they've answered appropriately. As part of the stakeholder engagement, part of what we do, you'll see in page 31 of the APP, refers to stakeholder management. So we'd like to make sure that we continue to deal with our stakeholders appropriately. I'd like to just move over now, in the interest of time, just so that we deal with the budget. And I'll hand over at this stage to our CFO so that we deal with the budget as it attains to the APP. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members.
Chair, thank you very much. I'm going to start on the first three lines of the table, which really splits the expenditure, the total expenditure of the SIU, and I'm going to concentrate on the 1920 financial year. So if you look at the split of the 718 million operational expenditure, going to the first program, which is the administrative program support departments, is a total figure of 223 million, which comprises 31% of the total expenditure. The second program, the core business, investigations and legal counsel, litigation, a total of 465 million. And our new program, which is the market data analytics and prevention, a total of 31 million. Chair, if we then move into the revenue side and the expenses, the revenue, which I'm going to come back to, if you look at these services, which is called in the MTF sale of goods and services, a total of 320 million, and that would be money that we actually invoice in terms of our investigations. We physically invoice it, we take the effort, we apply rates, and then we invoice it similar to the Auditor General. Other non-tax revenue, 35 million is interest on our excess funds that's currently deposited with the Corporation for Public Deposits in terms of the PFMA. And then the transfers is the government allocation, the fiscal allocation that comes through our executive authority, the Department of Justice, a total figure of 363 million. On the expenses side, the main expense, the SIU being a investigative agency, the human resource cost, the compensation of employees, is the biggest cost of 566 million. Goods and services, which is really administrative expenditure and office accommodation for the nine offices that the SIU are situated in across the country, a total of 135 million, and then depreciation of assets, 17 million. Chair, on the capital expenditure side, you'll see quite a growth from the current financial or the previous financial year 2018-19, 15 million to 65 million. And then 45 million and 45 million. That is really allocated towards the procurement of tools, relevant ICT tools, and the renewal of the total ICT platform that has not been renewed for the past 5 to 7 years. In terms of the headcount, you will also see a growth from 2018-19 to 20, growing from 532 headcount. That was our headcount as at the end of 31 March 2019, up to 673. And then a slower growth, 722. And that is really to meet the operational requirements in terms of the increase of work, which I'm going to go to on the next slide. Head of the unit has already indicated the growth. If you look on a year-on-year growth in the number of proclamations, we're looking at a 61% growth. And the next slide then indicates the actual human resource headcount and the related cost. You would see in terms of headcount, it grows over the five-year period towards a 6% effective rate and then 17% in rand value. Chair, coming to the funding model, we have reported previously to this committee as well. We don't believe that the current funding model is over the longer term sustainable, and the reason for that is that the debt is becoming a problem. So of the invoices that we issue, the 40% of the funding, we're currently sitting with quite a huge debt. It's close to 500 million. And I'm going to go to, just going over the slide 72, I'm going to go to slide 73, which indicates the year-on-year growth in our debt for the past 5 years or so has been 26%. If you look at the 2018 financial year, we're really sitting with a 500 million outstanding debt currently. And we have really implemented quite a number of actions. Systemically, the problems are that usually the state institutions do not have budget. So it's not like with the AG where they budget on an annual basis for our costs. They don't foresee that the SIU is going to come in and invoice them. So first of all, there's a systemic issue that there's no budget. And secondly, there could sometimes be a potential conflict of interest issues where senior officials are being investigated and those are the same people that must now pay you. So it is problematic. And we believe in the longer term we have to look at it, and we're already engaging National Treasury on it. If you look at the makeup of the just under 500 million debt, 493, it's sort of split in quarters, starting with national departments, the blue, the light blue. Then provincial departments, the purple, 140 million, public entities, 127 million, and local government, 107 million. I think in terms of all our debt, the local government, the municipalities, is really the ones really pressed and cannot pay us. Chair and members, we have done quite a lot. We've sent various letters. Some of the feedback that we've received in historic times is that the SIU has not supplied the state institutions with output reports. We have done that. We've given all of them progress reports. And we've even escalated to the presidency, and the presidency is now in the process of distributing SIU reports to all state institutions. In terms of follow-up action, so the SIU believe we've got the 500 million, we're not going to write it off. In terms of our Act, National Treasury has taken a stance, although in our Act they can give exemption, they have not done so, to any state institution, and we'll do anything and everything possible in order to recover that debt. Thank you, Chair. That concludes the financial portion.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. What stands out in the financials? We have a sound financial processes, and we are in a sound financial status. But the debt is an issue. We are not going on a downstream. Not at all. We are in a sound financial status. We are, as the auditors would say, we are a going concern. But if this debt situation is not addressed, it is likely to become a real risk, because had we been paid accordingly, we could probably be able to do more. Some of those headcount that we could not appoint in this year due to those financial constraints, We could possibly be filling those positions. But as the CFO has indicated, we've engaged our executive authority, the minister, and we will put in place steps that we take reasonable steps to make sure that we recover the debt. Thank you. Chair, we would like to now go into human capital statistics. We'll also not stay for a while on that. And would like our Chief Human Capital to talk to the Honourable Committee on the steps.
Thank you, HOU. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Just to take you quickly through what we have been what we have achieved in the past year. It is quite important to note that as human capital, we are aligned, well aligned to the vision of this organization, in particular to capacitate this organization with the well-skilled workforce, skilling our staff and co-creating with labor and with regards to, you know, the delivery of this social sustainable organization. So we have focused on four underlying goals for the previous year. Firstly, we had to make sure that we attract and retain employees with high potential and well-skilled employees by, of course, entrenching a fresh organizational culture, which we call a do culture. We have endeavored to develop our employees, the current employees, to meet the operational skills required and to improve the efficiencies. The fourth one is that we have endeavored also to maintain and enhance effective employee performance. To achieve, of course, all that, the organization embarked on a reorganization which led to us achieving the following deliverables, one of them being the revised organizational structure, which my HOU spoke about, the new value chain, which you have seen in one of the slides, the new job profiles, as well as the new grading system. And the figures that you see on the board now are such that as at the end of March 2019, we had a complement totaled to 532, as you may have heard from my CFO. However, what you see now is 531, which just reflects that one of the employees is on disability, and that's where you pick up this difference between the two figures. Of the 531 permanent and warm bodies that we have, 97 of those employees are permanent. And then 3% of those employees are on fixed term contracts. Of this number, I want us to then go into the next slide. The proposition on women employed at senior and top management totaled 24, of which that represents 7% of the total management workforce in the organization. We have in actual fact done extremely well in terms of filling all the vacancies at top management. As a part of this reorganization, we faced in the recruitment of the employees such that we made it intentional that we wanted to employ all executives by the end of 31st March 2019, which was achieved. Of the whole 33 appointments were made in the year 2018-2019. Our approach remains that our employment equity as well as employment policies and practices take into account and comply with the labor legislations of this country. Our recruitment initiatives, especially on internal appointments, are aligned to a special dispensation which was agreed with the labor representative. In particular, we have Nehau, who is a recognized union within the organization. And through that collective agreement, it was agreed that we will consider a relaxed criteria for all internal appointments. Of course, we continue to engage with labor on different matters, including policies, our procedures on an ongoing basis. And that's including the current engagements regarding the remuneration and the performance management framework. If we go to the next slide, you will notice that the previous slide, that we are an organization that believes so much in skilling up its employees. In the past financial year, we have actually afforded about 111 SIU members bursaries to an actual cost of about 1.6 million. We have implemented a number of programs, one of them being a forensic investigator internship program, which is planned for us to capacitate our employees. We have reorganized our organization, and we believe that this is the type of a program that will assist us in bringing in young people in the organization. 25 of this interns are actually external LLB graduates, and 20 of these interns have been actually granted an opportunity, and they are our internal employees. These are mostly our administrators, and they have been placed on the program so that we can assist in capacitating and resourcing the structure that we've been talking about. So in order for us to operate optimally, we needed to consider such. We continuously, of course, train and develop our own employees. We have, as we speak, advertised an internship program, a multidiscipline an internship program, which will also absorb another 25 young graduates from external. So that's our unemployed internship program that will be commencing first of September. So as part of capacitating the SIU, we have considered a number of initiatives. We are commencing in the next 2 months or so with a leadership program that will also build up the skills on leadership within the organization. We are also looking, of course, at other methods of attracting other skilled workforce. We are advertising as part of this reorganization. We have ended up with a few vacancies, which, of course, needed us to be creative in terms of getting the correct and the needed skills within the organization. As part of the strategy, we are also looking at benchmarking ourselves with other 3A entities in terms of, you know, our grades, in terms of our jobs. That will then assist us in performing and having the best benchmarks, and also retaining the good people that we have brought on board. One of the other initiatives that has become a thorn in our skin now, and we're working with labor, is the fact that we need to look into delinking ourselves from DPSA. We have, of course, started as a commission, and we are governed by an act. For a long time, we have been linked with DPSA. We are looking at exploring options in terms of the delinking. Thank you very much, and I think I should be done.
Oh, thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We have really done a lot. As part of the restructuring process, we have said that we would like to ensure that our employees are taken care of. In the past, the organization took quite a number of administrators in. And with engagement with labor, in the restructuring process, we have created a specific administrator stream. So in the long term, we would like to make sure that these administrators are skilled, and hence the programs that have been mentioned. We've created a, we want to skill them in forensic investigation so that they are not displaced with time. And that program is underway. There's instances where it has not been without difficulties, Chair, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, and some of the operational issues that we come across is that we would have taken a certain number of administrators, but the others would say we should have been taken in as well, and all of that. So we are saying this is an ongoing training program. Some of them will find space in the next occasion. If there has been issues in terms of the intake, let us look at those issues and let's resolve them and ensure that the others get a space going forward. So we are really pleased that we were able to accommodate those administrators and not displace them. So, Chair, the rest of the others, we are not. It's really targets that we have set ourselves in program one, Chair, with the guidance of the Chair, whether to go through line by line in terms of all of those targets.
We have read the document.
Yes.
I think if we can move straight towards wrapping up so that we allow space for engagement by the committee.
Thank you, Chair. The targets are really well set out in program one. There are really no some of the issues. Well, the one example that I would really want to surface is the to provide compliant and sustainable financial services in accordance with service delivery standards, percentage of valid invoices paid within 30 days. I've taken my colleagues on and say we need to come up to 100% here, because we know that this, amongst others, also impacts on the SMMEs that we contract and so on. But the 5% we are able to explain in terms of some of the percentage of invoices that are to and fro, and still under resolution. On the next page, it's really, I think, quite self-explanatory. There's no issues that I want to really single out to the Honourable Committee. Those are the annual targets at the 3 of 3. And what we have done is that we have converted the annual target into quarterly targets, because we do contribute also to the JCPS program of action, which is also measured quarterly. Slides 86, 7, and 8 is the quarterly target of program 1. Program 2, it's really some of those operational targets now. And we have included some improvement elements in those. Some of them are indicated there without going into details. And equally, they also have been converted into quarterly targets. Program 3, which is pretty much the new area of our value chain, we have also done the annual targets and the quarterly targets. Because this is a new area, we are really pacing ourselves in terms of ensuring that we contribute in that space. The next slide just gives an info to the Honorable Committee around the market data analytics that we want to conduct in terms of predictive analytics and those that would inform the risk management of the organizations. Talking risk management, part as we did this whole APP, we also make sure that we assess the risks that are attendant to the APP. I won't go into that. We have looked into the Institute of Risk Management, what they have said around the top risks in the country. As you can see on slide 101, there are those years where corruption continues to be at the top of the list of the risks. And we have now also conducted our strategic risk assessment. If this is a strategy and the APP, what are the risks that we need to make sure that we monitor? The next slide, slide 103, it's got the top risks on the left, and it's got the heat map. The heat map that really tells us what are the critical risks, and we've ranked them there. And we continue to monitor these risks. Our risk committee, which we've indicated before in the governance structure, is seized with monitoring the status of these risks. We will not say much around the award that the organization received, but I think this is an indication of our improved risk management process in the organization. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, would like to pause here and thank again the opportunity to present our APP. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Advocate Mutebi, and congratulations on the award. And please express on behalf of the committee our appreciation of the good work that led to you being awarded this award.
Thank you.
Let me acknowledge Honorable C. Tim Simang from the IFP, who has just joined us. And then Honorable from the ATM. Who has just joined us, but he was there when we were doing the introduction. He did introduce himself. Thank you very much. Before I open for the interaction, can we have a 5 minutes comfort break? I know people like Honorable Janji has reached that stage that he needs regular intervals. And then we'll come back and engage on the presentation. Thank you. So we need to also have space to prepare for the MPA. So I will really plead these members not to be long-winded. We will ask each member not to take more than 5 minutes when you ask questions. Based on the model that we are going to be adopting as the committee, there is still going to be a lot of time to engage with all the entities that have reported to us, either as a committee or as a subcommittee. So if we have not been able to touch everything today, we will be engaging entities at least quarterly. So there is going to be a robust oversight in this sixth administration. We are going to divide ourselves into those subcommittees so that we divide our work and ensure that there is follow-up on the entities. So I will ask members to engage. I will note hands. Honorable Hisham, Honorable Planet, Honorable Horn, Honorable Swart, Honorable Zungula, Honorable Jaila, and then Honorable Janji. Honorable Hisham.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just a few questions for clarity, Advocate Devi. Thank you for the presentation. Very much welcome. This is, of course, our first engagement on the matters at hand of national importance. I won't go immediately to the matters at hand. Just on the remedial action in the NPA, the National Prosecuting Authority engagement, we have noticed that in your report that there was an MOU to formalize the feedback process with monthly meeting between the head of the NPA Specialized Commercial Crime Unit in the SIU Special Unit to establish and track matters. Perhaps you want to clarify what has been done to strengthen, of course, or enforce these remedial actions where they're lacking. Secondly, just on the resolution on ongoing challenges around debt collection that you referred to in the finalization of the funding model, I was just wondering, with regard to the funding model, whether the percentage or distribution of personnel expenditure as opposed to goods and services, whether the funding received from the Treasury would it not be better that you almost ring-fence personnel expenditure so that you don't experience issues with vacancies because you are driven in terms of human capital, as you pointed out. Whether that's the case or not really, because your 40% income you referred to last, I imagine, is focused on operations of goods and services, as we know it. Just to clarify your stance on that, and also update on the effective engagement with the Treasury in regard to that itself. And second last, Chair, on the whole issue, just a cursory look at the challenges, or rather the update on the appointment of the Special Tribunal. The seat, you know, that you have indicated has been determined, and more or less when this Tribunal will start operating itself, given its urgency, and also given that one understands the reflection on operational need in terms of dependency on others, as yourself as alluded to. And then just lastly, on the appointment of the panels of experts, whether there's an update on that matter, because you referred to, or rather I want to indicate whether there's progress, because does this impact in any way on ongoing investigations such as the ones that ESCOM investigation comes to mind and others, and when the spin of experts, whether that's been finalized or not. And then lastly, the strengthening of the relationship between the Auditor General. As we know, on April 2019 is significant in that the Auditor General may now refer a suspected matter of material irregularity to a public body. What would be the interface between yourselves, Public Protector, NPA, and has that been clarified as a unit by yourself in your role in particular? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Pietis, Glenis.
Good morning, Mr. Matibi, and it was an impressive presentation. You committed to reduce your unit's dependence on government funding.
and your 2018-2019 APP introduced a performance indicator in this regard. It's now been removed in the 2019-2020 APP. Could you update me on the progress with the reduction in reliance on government funding, please? And could you explain to us why you've removed that indicator from your APP? You also mentioned that your redesigned organizational structure cannot be implemented due to financial constraints. Could you elaborate on these problems just briefly, please? Bearing in mind that, according to your own presentation, there's frequent overseas travel undertaken, which comes at a price. That one of your members spent, I believe the union rep spent 30 days in Hong Kong. What was he doing there and why was he there? And who footed the bill for that? Your union reps are mentioned as stakeholders. I'm not sure I understand that relationship. If you could just explain to me why they're stakeholders. And who bears the expense for the union that's in your office? So S&T office expenses, who supplies the vehicles, who pays for that kind of thing? I'd just like a little detail on that, please. You have, in October, I believe you purchased the BMW X5 for your use. Using SIU funds to the amount of $857,890 from Lendlin Auto. That's really not a problem. But in March 2019, I'm led to believe that you had blue lights and sirens installed in this vehicle. Is this correct? And if it is correct, in terms of which regulations and legislation do you use these blue lights and sirens? I presume that someone in your position has bodyguards. Who employs them? Are they seconded to you from the police? Are they from the DOJ? Or are they employed by the SIU? And under what legislation or regulations do they operate this vehicle? Then I'd like just a quick update, if you could, but very brief, on progress made with the Nkandla, Busasa and Life Esidimeni investigations and your interface with the NPA on those matters. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Huan.
Thank you, Chair, and from my side also thank you for the presentation. Chair, mention has been made by others of some of the proclamations and Mr. Mutibi dealt with the proclamations received in the past financial year. It is of course so, and he's also referred to the struggles of the SIU to have good turnaround times. So it would be good, and if it's not possible verbally now, then possibly in writing for us as a committee to get a full appraisal of, I don't want to say old proclamations, but previously we were briefed on proclamations as, issued as far back as 2010, which has not been finalized in full. One is specifically thinking of Department of Public Works, and it was an amount of nearly $2 billion in respect of both leases and overpayments, which the SIU was to try and reclaim on behalf of DPW. Others have mentioned correctional services, but in the past we've also received briefings on the proclamations dealing with social development. So if that information is available as to what the progress has been with those, it would be good, otherwise in writing. Then, Chair, in respect of the, growing their own timber in terms of the administrator intake, in principle, one must obviously say that this is a good initiative. However, it would seem, and I think it has been alluded to in very vague terms, that there's been, it has not been a seamless exercise. So I want to hear from the SIU whether the information I have that unfortunately in terms of both the involvement of the trade union, that it was sort of mid exercise. So it was not, you talk about an agreement reached with the trade union as to how these administrators would be taken on board as trainee forensic investigators. It would be problematic if the trade union was allowed to mid-exercise insist on a change of the rules of the game. So, for example, is it so that there was a so-called entrance examination or entrance exercise, and that ultimately, unfortunately, it was not the best performance in that exercise which was necessarily taken on board? And if so, it would be important to hear whether ultimately it was only trade union members that were taken on board. And in that vein, I think it's important for us also to hear of the staff component, how many are members of the trade union. And given the fact that the trade union has been given this, I don't want to say elevated status, but official status as a stakeholder, what measures are in place to ensure that also the rights of non-trade union members are protected in the governance of the SIU? Then, Chair, in respect of the international work, it is interesting, and obviously it can add value. I think the question that must be asked, however, is to what amounts from the SIU budget are involved also in making travel happen. I know there was recently a trip to Paris, and it would be good to hear whether that was part of the international work, and to what extent the international organizations do assist with the expenses thereof. And then lastly, I want to ask the question in respect of these days, we all know that in all, let's say, institutions reporting to Parliament, it sort of has become standard that there may be threats to personal safety of people. Read all sorts of stories of attempted poisoning, etc., etc. So I would like to hear from the SIU whether that has been the case at the SIU, and in addition to that, whether there has been spent money of public funds appropriated to the SIU for the upgrading of security around the personal or the private home of the executive authority. And if so, we all know that in terms of the, let's say, the executive of the country, there's a ministerial handbook. I would like to have some details as to what policies you have in place, how you went about to get the necessary approval, etc. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Advocate Matiba, and again from our side, thank you for the presentation. It's very commendable, some of your progresses that have been made, but can I just say that our perception is that there are so many people out in the public that want to see arrests, they want to see funds recovered that have been stolen through state capture, through corruption, and I'm one of your greatest fans over the years, the work that you do under severe financial constraints. So that having been said, could I just ask you, your funding model where you rely your bad debts, is the Department of Justice owing you any bad debts or correctional services? Secondly, relating to yesterday's proclamations referred to a number of courts that you'll be investigating, the construction of a number of courts, Limpopo High Court, Mpumalanga Court, Plettenberg Bay Magistrates Court, and a number of magistrates' courts. Have you already done preliminary work on those issues? Because we received inputs from the independent trust and progress made with those courts, and now we understand there may be a lot of corruption around that. That is something we need to be aware of as well. The other issue, correctional services gave us an input on that a number of the issues were sitting with you over the years. Maybe you can give us an update on those correctional services SIU investigations. You can give it to us in writing as well if we don't have time today and you might not have all that information. The issue of your civil litigation to me is great interest, the recovery of the money. At the moment, as I understand it, you are sitting with some litigation in the normal courts that is delayed and other that will now go through the special tribunals. And I'm very pleased that you might also include the asset forfeiture unit in that civil litigation. With the amount of 14.7 billion rand you're referring to, that is a substantial amount, and we would like to see those amounts recovered. In that regard, on page 41, you refer to civil litigation with Eskom Holdings, on behalf of Eskom Holdings, to the amount of 3.7 billion. Where is that process now? That would not be in the special tribunal, that would be in the high courts. You've also, we understand yesterday, the SABC is under severe financial constraints. There is a reference to 467.987 million rand civil litigation for the SABC. Can you respond, where's that process in recovery of those costs through civil litigation? Then the whole issue relating to your referral of matters to the MPA, other members have referred to that. When in the previous parliament you said there was a memorandum of understanding, but are you satisfied with the progress that has been made? We're talking about 686 cases that were referred to. And if you consider the Basasa matter, 10 years ago where you made recommendations, very little was done. What is your working relationship with the Hawks? Because as I understand it, you do a forensic inquiry, it's referred to the Hawks, they then have to do a separate forensic inquiry, and surely that is a duplication of matters. And then lastly, Chair, thank you. In the last Parliament, in February this year, there was an engagement with the Minister of Justice where he referred to the Basasa inquiry, and you might remember, you might have, you weren't here, but he alluded to the fact that had the SIU, that there was a gap in their recommendations relating to Basasa, and had they indicated, had they done a deeper briefing on the departures that they might, well, the department would have cut ties with Basasa. And obviously we defended you there in that, and we were astonished that the minister should infer on your ability with the Basasa matter. But what is your comment on that? Because clearly it's the last parliament, but you haven't had an opportunity to address that issue that was in the media at that stage, February this year. Should you wish to comment on that? Thank you, Chair.
Your Honourable Zongula.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is very brief. Firstly, I want to welcome the presentation. It gives confidence that things are looking good. Now, I want to focus on the MOU that has been signed with the MPA, because I think that is the most critical part to ensure that there are arrests and there is prosecution for all of the wrongdoers. Now, same question with as Mr. Honourable Swartz, are you confident in the MOU that it will translate to work being done by the NPA to recover assets, as well as ensuring that prosecutions do actually follow? Because I think if we do not address that MOU, we can have an MOU, but if it does not give you as a SIU confidence that work will be done on the other side in relation to prosecution and arrest, then I think that is something that we need to have a look at. So I just need commentary from your side whether you're confident on the content and how the MOU is structured that work will be done from the side of the NPA. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Jale.
Thank you, Chair. I'm also welcoming the very progressive report that has been presented. My chairperson is on the issue of vacancies. Yes, we did hear a report on that one, but also I want to get more clarity on the issue of According to 2018-2019 annual performance plan, the unit committed to reduce its vacancies rate to 14% by the end of 2018-2019 and reduce it to 8% also in 2019 and 2020. Can we get an update on the current vacancy rate, the units committed to employ equity target, especially in the respect of the employment of women, and also on the issues of more on disability, you know, we did hear a little bit of that earlier. And then the other one also, Chair, is on the issue of stakeholder survey. Can we get more information on the results and how these results will be used by the unit to improve its services? And lastly, on the benchmarking visits that they have made, the lesson learned, and how possible, if possible, these lessons can be incorporated into the work of the ICU. Can you get more information on that one? Thank you.
Honorable Chanchi.
Thank you, Chair. In your 5 minutes, I just want to be very quick because the 5 minutes has deprived you of any congratulations. So can't be part of my 5 minutes. We'll do it offline. Maybe on slide 12, if you can start there in your value chain, level value chain. I think what I'm missing, which obviously would not be in this slide, would be in your strat plan or APP, is the time journey. We have to make you accountable. And the only way for us to do that is when you say you receive, you register, you the feasibility, we need to follow you with a time map. From registration, how much time does it take? There's got to be, you don't have to answer me that, but in a written way, I think that is going to be, because that's the only way that we can scrutinize you in terms of your work. So you need to help us on that. Then the next slide is on slide 17, the organizational structure. Where you're having the provinces except the Northern Cape. And my only question there is, do you have any overall national cover? Because when you have got the provincial structures, there's always the temptation your work to be softened. They build relationships where they are. And the kind of scrutiny and investigations get to be influenced. And unless you have got the national cover, you miss out a lot, and you might... It could be part of your risk and threats, and so on. The next slide, quickly, Chair, is on slide 29, I think a very important slide, where you're saying 2019-20 is about 25 of those, with the new ones that you've added. Just on that, you've tried to take us through about five of those, but it will be important because you're a bit vague, and I want you to be more explicit. You don't have to give us the things that will compromise your work, but I want to leave you knowing from that 25, you've just mentioned five. Who are these? The proclamations. That's where I am. But you've also said you've also taken an interest on the state capture revelations, but you've not mentioned other commissions. So it means you're not interested in the PIC. You're not interested in the Nguyen Commission. That was the, you're not interested in the Mokoro, or you've just taken a decision that there's nothing, because it seems you have focused on the state capture only. Then the very next slide, it's on your record of outcomes. Maybe what you also need, like Mr. Swartz, Honorable Swartz, I'm interested in the 2018-2019, the referrals to the MPA, the age analysis of those referrals, because that is going to indicate to us whether you're just dumping off things that you, or was omitting them in the afternoon in any case. Maybe you can help us with that whilst you're here, so that we're able to take the issue up. I think the age analysis is important. Again, on slide 31, in relation to the NPA, follow up on Mr. Zongula's question, is the MOU with the DPP. You said you're satisfied with the process underway. I don't know what you're satisfied about. could you elaborate to us what is it that makes you happy? And give us, without giving us the details of what, who you go to arrest or who they, I just need to follow you on that. In any case, we'll follow it up to them for their coming here. The disciplinary referrals, there seems to be, it was, you explained the ESCOM kind of jump thing, but it has gone down. Is that a demonstration of good work? That there are no longer these disciplinary things, or what is happening, or you've just stopped doing that? It does need to be elaborated. I think the matter of the delay in courts, I'm interested, what kind of delays are you dealing with there? Chair, just as I, on slide 40, you, on the vulnerable sectors, out of 15, you seem to be good in three only. You've only done two, the green and the yellow, actually 2.5. So what's wrong? What's your pace with the other? Why is the pace so slow? Page 83, on the vacancy, in terms of the APP, the annual targets, program one, to attract a skilled workforce that is managed within the performance-driven environment, the percentage of vacancy rate, you've put it at 12 throughout. Now I'm interested, as we speak, your vacancy rate is not 12. It's less than 12. Am I right? And if it is less than 12, why are you going to 12 for the vacancy rate? You're trying to create a comfort zone for yourself? What is happening here? So suppose, I'm not sure 12 is a baseline, and I doubt if it is a baseline as we speak currently in terms of the vacancy rate. I'll skip this because I was going to congratulate you on the high rate of keeping interns. It's one of the best practices. You train them, but they get to be part of the employer. But I don't have time for that, unfortunately. Also, still on the target on page 90, the first two on page 90 are the program two annual targets. You, everywhere else, you've used numbers, but the first two you've used percentages, when you could easily have to use numbers. So are you trying to trick us there? Because there's no reason why you couldn't use numbers in terms of the percentages. The last one, Chair, on the budget, just on the budget. Maybe CFO, if you could also just re-elaborate the issue of the assets. The depreciation kind of column, I didn't really follow you there on that one. But also, as a suggestion, I'm not sure whether, because you're saying that debt is increasingly becoming a major risk, the 500 plus minus 500 million kind of debt, because here you're doing 106 things in your municipalities, bulk of it, you said, is municipalities. I'm not sure if you, and you are saying you're not going to be writing that off. So it means you are intent on getting that, and work has been done. Is there a rethink in your model as part of your, I don't know how you missed that in your case, that there are some critical work that you must do that must not be dependent on those that you must investigate. And so that's the model I'm looking for, and it's not coming forth. But that could be the helpful one, because you have to do these things. As you said, some officials, senior officials, are not going to prioritize that budget, because it is about them. But how do we get there? It's that. Thank you, Chair. Sorry for exceeding the 5 minutes. I hope I did not.
You did not. Honorable Neville Dresden.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the SIU team for your in-depth presentation. I would like to add quickly in relation to the vacancy rates. We are trying to keep the vacancy rate at 10% or below. So I'm curious to know, 2021, 2022, you keeping it at 12% instead of trying to aim for the 10% or below. And secondly, congratulations to you on your numbers of female staff. But I see there, as the previous honourable member mentioned, there are no signs of staff members with disability.
So I'd like to know, are you meeting the 2%? Are you below the 2% as required? And then DPME has tried to encourage all departments to make payments within the 30 days. Does that apply to you as well? Because, you know, people could be waiting for payments. So the 30-day principle, does it apply to you or not? And that is all from me. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Nsemang, you were out when we noted questions. I'm not sure whether you wanted to raise anything.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Perhaps just one question. The advocate addressed us on the turnaround time. We, as members of the public, always experience that the investigations are taking too long, especially where the officials are suspended because of the investigation, but continue drawing their salaries. Now, I'm interested in finding out what causes this length of time. Is it perhaps the nature of the cases themselves, or is it the lack of the necessary skills on the part of the investigators? Or is this shortage of staff with these many vacancies in the department? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would like also to ask some few questions. Firstly, on the appointment of panel of experts, there are quite a number of extensions that have been made. Is there a particular reason? There is an extension until the 30th of January, 31st March, again 30 June. Is there a particular reason for all those extensions? Also, at some point we read about the anti-corruption task team, that at some point it was not functional. Is there any progress now? Have you noticed any progress now on the functionality of the anti-corruption task team? One of the suggestions perhaps you might need to consider is engagement with COFTA. To have the same engagement as you have with the Office of the Auditor General, because they are responsible for municipalities and provincial governments. If you can perhaps think about that. What led to you having at some point a 23% vacancy rate in your senior management? What was the problem? I think also on our side, if we get more information, we might consider as a committee, upon deliberation, engaging also other portfolio committees to ensure that entities or government departments that are not paying are made to fulfill their duty. To try and assist with the bad debt, but we might need more information as the committee. The revised organizational structure. There seems to be a perpetual revision of organizational structures. Since I think I've seen quite a number of presentations, not necessarily you, but others, but there seems generally to be a perpetual revision of organizational structure, which might
sometimes be seen as an indication of instability. Can you comment on that? And then lastly, at some point you had the 120 million rand of surplus. I think it was 2017, 2018. What happened to that surplus? Thank you. Were you Advocate Mthebe?
No, thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members. The question around the MOU with the NPA to strengthen the interaction and whether it has worked or not. We concluded this MOU in 2017 already. And that is at that time already when we realized that we needed to follow up with our referrals. And this was not only the referrals that we were dealing with. It is because of the new strategy that we have implemented that requires us to follow up on our referrals. Whether it be disciplinary process or NPA, and we also started putting in measures on the civil litigation side, and hence the process that led to the reestablishment of the special tribunal. So we were quite composite. We were not just focusing on one referral, be it NPA, although it is also important, because people want to see the results, the referrals and prosecutions that should follow. So when we entered into that MOU, we put in place a monitoring structure. And the monitoring structure is constituted by SIU and NPA. That MOU envisaged that that structure would meet regularly. And we would then have our list of referrals, and they would also account on their side and say what has happened to each case. In one of the presentations that we presented before, when we presented the annual report before, we could indicate some of those matters that we are following on. But to date, there hasn't been really any satisfactory progress in terms of implementing this MOU. Changes in the leadership at NPA, we again started re-engaging. So the re-engagement started in February, and it went on until as late as yesterday. So the intention is again to say, we've got this MOU, let us ensure that this MOU produces results. So what I've mentioned, that I'm satisfied and happy with the processes that have been put in place, this is what I mean. There has been action, there's a team that has been put in place at NPA. That team interacts with us. Our chief legal and our national investigating officer, they are part of that interaction. We get informed on list by list, what is it that's happening to those cases. We expect that we will have a full account with time. So that is the part that gives us comfort that, you know, these matters will be followed on. With the establishment of the investigative directorate at NPA, we are also satisfied that the capacity issues that the NPA has experienced, I'm sure they're better positioned to talk about that, will be addressed to some extent, and we will continue to see traction in those matters.
In terms of the grant that we receive from National Treasury, I'll just probably allow the CFO to talk to that, but the question is, shouldn't we ring-fence the grant to make sure that, you know, we ring-fence it around the staff payments so that we don't experience problems with staffing? The extent that we receive the grant and also the revenue that we make from our services, we ensure that we balance out our books in terms of our operational requirements. That possibility, I'm sure there's always a possibility, but from the financial management side, whether you know, Treasury regulations would allow us so that we can only ring fence the grant for only a certain aspect of our business, I can possibly give the CFO the opportunity just on this aspect to make a comment.
I think what we need to do to save time, answer all your questions, and then he will deal with his.
Thank you, Chair. If the CFO can just note that. The issue around the special tribunal, we have been part of the process, and we know that the seat of the tribunal has preliminarily been identified as the Gauteng South, which is referred to as Boysen's Court. In terms of the operations time, it's really not in our hands. This is a subject of the Department of Justice to make sure that all the required measures are put in place to ensure that the court operates and operates well. So the timeline of on or before October has been the timeline that we've been engaged on. But as I said, the qualification is that it's subject to the measures that DOJ puts in place. The appointment of panel of experts, when we looked at our resourcing model is twofold. We will have the internal resources, permanent appointees, permanent staff of SIU. Our resourcing model does not make provision for appointment of certain experts as permanent employees. So when we got proclamations, for example, like ESCOM and Transnet, we identified the need for specialists, which were like your engineers. On the Transnet side, there's quantitative surveyors that we needed to have in place, and all of those other specialized services. So we went out some few months or a year ago to put in place that panel of experts, and then the question was, has it been finalized? Yes, it was finalized, and we have that panel in place. We do from time to time, when there's a need in the investigation space to acquire a certain expert, we follow the SCM process to make sure that we acquire those experts. Strengthening of the SIU and AG interface. We've got, again in that space, we've got an MOU that was signed a while back. But during the amendment of the legislation applicable to the Auditor General's office, we have engaged with the AG himself, and we spoke about the mechanism of this referral once the legislation has been promulgated. And we had several engagements, and we have an agreement now, and now it's provided for in the law. It's for the AG now to formally start referring matters to us. Previously, it's been an engagement along the lines of asking for information, asking for that audit report there that would contribute to our investigation. But now it's formalized in the legislation. We're expecting to see some of those referrals going forward. I would like to deal with the issues around the reduction on government grants, the target that we had, and that it was removed, and I'm sure the CFO can also add on that. We've realized that although this is something that we want to do, it is not 100% in our control, so to speak. We would like to continue to engage with all the stakeholders, the main stakeholder being the National Treasury. But that part is also provided for in the legislation. So that could be the part that's also dealt with as part of the amendment of our legislation. So we did not remove it from the APP simply because we don't want it done. It's on the critical path. We would like it achieved, but it's not something that's really within our control, but we would like to ensure that we follow on that. If it's something that we still need to surface, and that's why we also continue to report and present on it, because we see it as an important part. Yes, we say the structure cannot be filled in this financial year, simply because we had to place ourselves with the MTEF framework based on the budgetary constraints that we have. And we have presented to the committee in terms of that those phases. And we believe that if we continue to fill on that basis, we should be able to meet the business growth or the growth in proclamations that are coming. The corollary to that question is that we couldn't fill the positions because there is expenditure that happens elsewhere. And that introduced the issue around stakeholders. We have defined stakeholders, internal stakeholders and external stakeholders. As part of the defined stakeholders internally, we've got the members of the audit committee that are a stakeholder. We've got our employees that are our internal stakeholders. We've got unions that are our stakeholders. Chairperson, we operate in a country where unions are recognized. Labor Relations Act specifically determines that there shall be a right of association of members, and that right is determined in terms of the unions that the employees belong to. However, it doesn't end there. There is a provision in the Labor Relations Act that you cannot just have a proliferation of trade unions in the workplace, and hence the provision for recognized trade union. And there's a threshold that is introduced in terms of recognizing recognized trade unions. As we joined SIU, we found that there's a recognition agreement that has been signed between SIU and NEHAU. And we looked at the agreement. We are satisfied that it complies with the Labor Relations Act provision. So when we defined the universe of stakeholders, we could not leave out this key stakeholder called the trade union. And we continue to say it is a key stakeholder until we are proved wrong. There is clear indications out there that if we don't co-create, and we use the word co-create guardedly, we don't use co-management. To a large extent, this line is thin. In some instances, co-creation is taken for co-management. We use the word co-creation simply because the stakeholders need to know the path that we are charting for the organization. When we sought ourselves to reorganize the organization, it was important that we take the union on board. And when we joined SIU around 2016, we found that union-management relationship were rock bottom. acrimonious, and to an extent that you couldn't really move in terms of moving the organization forward. And we realized that as part of stakeholder management, we needed to ensure that we have sound labor relations in the organization. And that has produced optimum results. What have we done to ensure that those relations are improved? We have to make sure that we abide by the recognition agreement first, and to ensure that where the business processes, they are understood. When we got into the reorganization of the organization, we created structures where the union representations were represented in those structures of ensuring that they understand the reorganization and the restructuring of the organization. And we have seen that pay off, and we still do say that that did not amount to co-management. We continue to manage. We know where we want to take the direction of the organization. We understand the context in which we are operating. In terms of the expenditure of the union activities is spelled out in the recognition agreement, where there's areas where there's like shop stewards council meetings, those expenditures are spelled out. There are some instances where some initiatives are management initiated, and those expenditures are then footed out in terms of what is it that the management initiates. I'd like to refute the allegation or the statement that there was a union management, the union representative who spent 30 days overseas. That is incorrect, Chairperson. And we are open to further engagements around that. Chairperson, we have experienced various numbers of pushbacks when we started, and we to date continue to make sure that we are not retarded in terms of making sure that we push the organization forward. There has been various allegations peddled out there, and we have been steadfast and make sure that we subject them to process and make sure that where there's audits, they are clearly audited, all of these processes are audited, and make sure that we open our books to any kind of information or any kind of investigation. The overseas trips, there is standards. If I, as the head of the unit, need to undertake an overseas trip, there's a process that follows. It gets signed off. There's a business case first. What is the purpose? And it's submitted to the executive authority. Then it's signed off. All of these are open. They're out there. Can be audited. And when we return, we ensure that we incorporate the outcomes of what we have learned. There's been questions around the benchmarks. We are pleased, we are ready to present to the committee what we have learned in Hong Kong and what we have left, what we have learned in Singapore. The issue around the security. I joined the organization in 2016 May. And at that time, I was focused on ensuring that I understand the challenges the organization is facing, and making sure that we understand what the inefficiencies, what is it that the business needed to improve. And hence, the turnaround strategy, the new strategy. But as we increased our work and made sure that our impact is felt, I started to ensure that the risk profile of the organization and the risk profile around myself is understood and taken care of. There's a question around general staff, whether there's threats, and we'll come back to that. So in 2016, 2017, and only in 2018 did we say I needed to make sure that the security assessment, and this is how it happened, and probably all of those that, you know, made open those reports to the honourable members. They are not cited. They are, we don't inform the staff on what is it that we are doing on the security measures of the head of the unit. But this is how it happened. And this happens in other entities of our PS. This is a subject which was done by the South African Police Service. They conduct a security risk assessment. This was done, I think, in 2017 already. And there was a report which was produced, and that report had various recommendations which for security measures we will not announce publicly. But if the committee is interested in that report, one way or another, we can make it available. And that report had various recommendations in terms of what is it that we needed to do. And that is done, as we say, in other agencies of our equivalent. And that report was tabled with the executive authority of SIU, which is the Minister of Justice at the time, and it was also tabled with the Minister of Police. They have all been cited, and this is the process. That is probably the part that the people who reported this are not aware of. They probably are of the view that we wake up the next day and order that this thing should be done. We follow process, we respect the rule of law, Chairperson, and those measures have been put in place subject to that security risk assessment report. With specific reference to the vehicle, because it was spelled out, so singled out. When we joined, amongst others, when I established what is it that the business looks like, amongst others, I was informed that the head of the unit had the use of an official vehicle, and that was in 2016 when I joined. But, Chairperson, I was focused on ensuring that I understand the business. I continued to use my own personal vehicle from 2016, 2017, 2018 without claiming anything, ensuring that the business runs. Those people who have reported have certainly not reported that I ran a risk of that risk materializing during that time. I came from a space that says the organization needs to run, and I had to understand that the organization runs and runs properly. But when the risk profile changed and I was ensuring that that part also is taken care of, it is only at that time. And I didn't just go and say, all right, you're informing that the previous head used to have the use of a 7 Series, go and purchase a 7 Series. I didn't do that. And I said the process has to be followed. That's when we started the process of risk assessment and all of that. All of the measures that are implemented based on the security assessment and the recommendations that were made, and they have been surfaced up to the executive authority, both for justice and all for the police. The issue around Nkandla and life esidimeni. Nkandla has been investigated before, even before my time. A report was issued. Recommendations were made to the public works to issue disciplinary process. What we are seized with at the moment, a special investigating unit, is the civil litigation part. And my colleague, the chief legal, can probably have more details, but we appeared recently at the court in KZN, where the matter, based on the representations by the Mr. can't recall his name, but the other party, they make representations, the architect, and the judge, in his view, postponed the matter. And these are some of the issues that we are saying If we had a specialized tribunal that deals with this, the matter would probably not be postponed for that long, and it would be dealt with as quickly as possible. So we are at the stage where we are still following up on the recovery of the identified matters in the Nkandla litigation, and it's still going on. Life Esidimeni, this is one of the matters. We did say that we are prioritizing matters with NPA. This is one of the matters that we seek to prioritize. Eskom, NPA, Life Esidimeni, the issues in the some of the national departments, water affairs in particular. But these are just the priorities, but Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, all the referrals are important because we have referred them simply because there's a need for prosecution. So this prioritization is probably an anomaly, but we have taken a factor that says if this attracts more public interest, it's probably a factor that we take into account in prioritization. So these matters will be prioritized, and the NPA can possibly confirm that when they appear, and we would like to see that there's traction in those matters. The issues around 2010 proclamation and some of the examples being public works, as we sit today, and we have seen, you'll see in our performance information that there is an upward improvement in terms of reports submitted to the President. And all of those matters, when we started in 2016, 2017, that is the part that we identified as having probably caused a reputational risk to SIU, investigating for too long. And we introduced the review, project review process. And that project review was looking at the timeline of when the investigation started, when the proclamation was issued, and we then confronted the investigating teams and said there is no rationale that an investigation can take 5 years or 7 years. So we are at a stage now where our books would be showing almost current investigations, not more than 3 years. So we have cleaned up that space to ensure that we finalize our investigations. The issue around the involvement of the trade union, I think I dealt with that part, but it's simply because this is now is the recognized trade union in the organization. There's no other recognized trade union. And we are not saying other trade unions cannot organize in the organization. Other members are free to belong to any other trade union. In fact, we have seen it, that in other instances, whether it's internal litigation or labor relations or civil or disciplinary matters, they get represented by other unions that are not recognized because that is not collective bargaining. But for collective bargaining, whether collective consultation, we will only deal with a recognized trade union. That is legal, that is proper. There were initiatives that some of the employees, for other reasons known to them, they supported rival trade unions, and there was a process to ensure that they are recognized internally. We couldn't stop that, but they had to make sure that they do it legally and they meet the threshold before they are recognized. We cannot bargain with them when they are not recognized. I think the international work, we've covered that. That is the part that we presented on. And every part of our international work, we can account to that. More often, we do that under the banner of the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, SADC and AU. We get some of the invites through the Department of Justice. Some of the invites come directly. Before when we joined, we found that SIU belonged to some of these organizations, and rightfully so, because of the mandate that includes understanding the corruption landscape landscape globally and nationally. Right. People want to see arrests. We agree with that. That where there's sufficient evidence, that has been referred for consideration by NPA, and there's sufficient grounds for prosecution, sufficient grounds for arrest, we would like to see that happening. And that's the part that we referred to in the MOU space, that we would like to make sure that part is unlocked to ensure that there's action. Because we've heard the public, as we always say, expects that to see the results. But we always say, as law enforcement agencies, that we have to make sure that we investigate within our investigative methodologies, within the law, and make sure that there's sufficient evidence to make sure that we take criminal actions. The issue around the funding model, I think we addressed that. The issue around bad debt, whether the Department of Justice also owes, because there's been some previous investigations done in the department. There has been fees that have been levied, but my information to date is that the Department of Justice also has been engaged as part of this debt management, and that there is processes to ensure that payment reaches us. If there has been any recent payments, I'm sure the finance department can attest to that. The CFO can indicate that. The 3.7 billion litigation with Eskom, we've been in public with that, because when we serve the summonses, they become public. This was the result of the investigation that we are doing currently on some of the irregularities that we found in the purchase of coal. And this is the litigation that relates to the contract between Eskom and Tegeta. So this matter is in court, and understandably so, that we cannot say really much except to say that the litigation process is underway and all of the legal processes are being respected. The SABC litigations, yes, that is a cumulative amount of the matters that are in court, in the civil court, in the ordinary court, and we respect those processes to run. And what we are saying as we look to the re-establishment of the special tribunal is that where matters have not really started and they are not partly heard in the courts, we would like to consider engaging the other parties so that we can withdraw them from the ordinary court and place them on the special tribunal role. But that is the part that that will be dealt with as the special tribunal is reestablished. I think there was a follow-up question around the MOU with MPA. We believe we have dealt with that comprehensively, Honourable Chair and members. If there's still further question, we can take that. The issue around the vacancy rate, it has really occupied us quite extensively. And the head of the human capital can indicate that I have said let's challenge ourselves to be within the benchmark. Right? And the benchmark is either international or national, but I've been informed that the acceptable benchmark is 10%. So at the moment, I will be talking under correction, but we can indicate what our vacancy rate is. And we seek to make sure that as we fill these positions, because we understand that we have to be properly resourced, we cannot allow ourselves to be below the best practice of vacancy rates. So that's the part then that says we would like to work towards ensuring that the organization is well-resourced, and where there's vacancies, the vacancies should not be below the benchmark. Should not be above, yes, sorry, thank you. They should not be above the benchmark. The issue around the value chain, we do have
standard operating procedures, which we have finalized as a draft. It's just going through the process where it will be signed off formally, but all of those timelines that are attendant to the value chain are already being executed upon. Like in the case assessment process, we've got timelines. As the Honorable Member stated, we can submit that in writing in terms of what are the timelines that we are working ourselves on. In terms of the commissions, and we are thankful that the Honorable Member has questioned us on that. In this governance committee, we also do look at the PIC Commission. In fact, one of my colleagues is here whom we have tasked to engage with the PIC Commission. We will also look at the Nugent Commission outcomes. We'll engage with the South African Revenue Service if there's an instance where we would need to come in and make sure that we take the process forward. We will do so. The age analysis of the NPA referrals, we do not have it at hand. That is one of the parts that we can submit, Honorable Chair and members. The related question to that was, what did I mean when I said I was satisfied about the process underway? I think I have covered that part earlier on. The disciplinary referrals, Chairperson, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, although the graph shows that there's almost a steep decline, in fact, it's too drastic if you look at it. But it's simply because of the nature of the investigations we have. It's not that we are not doing anything in that space. We continue to refer. But this number that was done at the time in the ESCOM investigations at that time, it was really remarkably, if we were doing a model, it will probably be an outlier or exception. It was quite a big number of conflict of interest referrals that we made at the time. And as I say, it really depends on the nature of the investigation. If you can see on some of those examples we have given in the prioritized sectors, there's a number of referrals that we have made in the disciplinary. Just for those matters that are in the prioritized sectors, we've referred disciplinary matters to about 210 to various institutions. So we continue to refer based on the findings that we make per investigation. Slide on vulnerable sectors, what is the pace on other sectors? When we presented, we did say that all of these sectors are important. But at the ACTG, we said, let's create a blueprint of how are we going to deal with this vulnerable sector. Because we needed, and this is a related question to the effectiveness of ACTG that the chairperson asked. There has been a change of chairperson with the change of leadership at the DPCI. This committee, this ACTG, is chaired by the HOPS, the head of the HOPS, and we have seen tremendous changes in terms of how ACTT is managed at the moment. We are seeing traction. We are seeing matters being considered and matters really being actioned. These vulnerable sectors, although the legend shows green and yellow on the others, there are cases in all of those other sectors which are sort of not color-coded. So it's not like the other sectors are not being investigated one way or another, either by SIU or the HOPS. So on the usage of percentages than numbers on page 90, we continue to get counsel stroke advice from our performance management experts in terms of how to measure some of the outputs. So some of the outputs are sort of numbers-driven, some of the outputs are process-driven, and where it's process-driven, we really have to just check what is the, you know, the, call it implementation rate of the improvement process. So if the committee would like a further expansion of that, we can do that. But that's really the rationale that led us to usage of percentage in some and usage of numbers in some, and our performance management department monitors that process. The question around debt, this is something, as I said, it's something that's critical, it's on the critical path. We would like this addressed, and once and for all, it will be attended to. We are engaged in National Treasury. We will make sure that as we amend our legislation, that is also incorporated long term. But I still need to underline that SIU is a going concern. We are not in financial crisis. We have got this debt problem that we need to manage. If we don't manage it appropriately, it will translate into a problem. But at the moment, and thank to Chair, that if there's any way that the committee could assist in this regard, we will really appreciate that. We have taken into account the question around the disabilities. We have that on our record. We need to improve in that space. We acknowledge that that is where we are wanting. But when I engaged with the HR team and the other team colleagues, I said, while we want to achieve the target, it's not going to help if we just go out and recruit and appoint disabled people and our infrastructure is not aligned and does not allow for that. So there is quite a number of activities around that to make sure that when we do meet that requirement, is also in a way that takes into account the infrastructure so that we enable these people when they join the organization. The issue around turnaround times, especially when officials are on suspension, we have really taken this into account. And that is why, as part of our strategic focus, is to say we must improve, we must make sure that we turn around our investigations quickly. However, we have the view, and the law is clear on this, that where a disciplinary process has to be taken and there's sufficient evidence, there is no need for a state institution to wait longer and to allow other processes to be completed. We see this quite often, but we are of the view that there is no impediment where there is sufficient evidence for disciplinary process to be instituted, that it should be instituted. So we're working with state institutions around that to ensure that there's no delay. There was a question around panel of experts and extensions. The CFO said he will carry that part. ACTT functionality, I think we've addressed that. We do take the council in terms of engagement with COCTA because the municipal space is one of the spaces that, or call it local government, is one of the spaces that we would like to make sure that it's addressed. We've addressed the issue around vacancy rate, state institutions that are not paying, that is the debt level. There seems to be a perpetual reorganization, the organizational structure, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, when we started with the reorganization, which was around 2016-2017, when we did the case for change and the feasibility, by that time, SIU had done some reorganization work, which was not concluded, by the way. And that was way back in 2009. And that part was not concluded. And that created a whole lot of internal consternations. Internal. When I came in and assessed the situation around people, I found that there's a whole lot of CZMA cases, a whole lot of grievances, a whole lot of complaints, and all of that were premised around people issues. Pay issues, progression issues and all of that. So those were premised around the fact that they were not adequately addressed at the time. So when we started the reorganization, we thought it was appropriate, and by all standards, it was really, I think, the right time to reorganize because, as we said, the world is changing, the ways of doing business are changing. We have to make sure that the organization is repositioned appropriately to make sure that it meets the challenges. So, Chair, the way we see it is that we have done this reorganization. We will see it through. We will see the improvements. Best practice reorganizations of this magnitude are probably done, after every 5 years or whatever the case may be, but there is no need to change where there is not necessary to change. You can do a review and still find that the organization structure is valid or the strategy is valid. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we believe it was the right time to do the OC review, and we will not do any other OC review unless there's drastic environmental or business changes out there. Chair, I want to give the opportunity to the CFO so that he can respond to some of the items that he has noted.
CFO, please just don't quickly repeat all the things that the Chair has.
Okay.
As already explained, yes. Just raise the issues that have not been covered.
Okay, Chair, just on the funding model, what we're saying in terms of the review of the funding model, if you look at the operational expenses, if you take next year as an example, 720 million, then 60% of that can be covered cash flow-wise by the government grant that we get on a monthly basis. 40% is covered by the invoices that we would issue and we would get the cash in. And for the past few years, we have been getting the cash in. What we're saying is, if in the long term it presents itself as a problem, then it will have a long-term effect on the financial sustainability. For now, if you look at the past 4 years, despite the challenges, we've been able to build up some cash resources from 2016, from 240 million to 2017, 293 million, 2018, 514, and for the current year, the last year, 554 million in the balance sheet, in the bank. And although the Treasury must, on an annual basis, approve that you can carry over your surpluses, they have been doing so, and we've got no reason to believe that they will not approve in this current year. So what we're saying, we are a going concern, and for the next foreseeable future, even if we don't get any debt in into the next year, for the next 3 years, we will be a going concern. So the funding model is really to engage Treasury to see, is there a possibility where we can increase the government funding, the government grant, from 60% to something higher? And we base that on the fact that we've done international benchmarks to all similar agencies, and you'll find that almost all of the agencies similar to the SIU's mandate is fully funded by government. They fund them 100%. In our case, we funded 60%, and we want to increase that slightly towards 100% in time. So that's on the funding model. Related to that in the debt, we are in discussion with the Department of Justice. There is a historic debt that they owe us, and then there's a new debt where we don't foresee any problem on some of the newer proclamations on the state attorney that we're investigating. Correctional services are on an ongoing basis paying us, so they in terms of debt, correctional services is not a problem. Just briefly, on the panel of experts, around about July last year, we identified that we need these experts. We put together a panel of terms of reference to effectively appoint a panel of 31 different experts. Now, that related effectively to 31 individual tenders, and we approached them in three phases, the first phases being the most important proclamations that we were working on. We're done with phase one, so that's fully appointed, and we're partly done with phase two and phase three. It's just undergoing final quality review by our own internal audit department, so as part of our internal price quality assurance processes to make sure that we comply fully to Treasury regulations. That's still being audited, and it's foreseen that it will be done by the end of July and phase three end of August latest. And the reason why we had to extend
in terms of the Treasury regulation, if you go over a 90-day period, you have to extend. That was purely administrative of nature. The service providers who tendered was not jeopardized in any way by doing that. I think that deals with the additional issues. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. But with your permission, there's one aspect relating to those security issues that I want to close on, is that the information that has been supplied probably did missed a very other aspect. When the make of the vehicle may be misleading, but what they don't know, or they know they just didn't say it, is that we went out to buy a second-hand vehicle, despite the allowed amount which we can submit to the committee if need be, and we have followed process. We engaged the National Treasury. We made sure that all of the procurement processes are followed. Our colleagues in SIU, those that are watching us, and we've got no problem with that, always make sure that, they probably wish that we do not follow process in some instances, and they would get us. But, Chair, we can assure this committee, and we can assure the members, that we subscribe to clean governance, we subscribe to process, we will at all times make sure that we follow applicable processes. Thank you very much. We appreciate you.
Mr. Chair, may I just make a follow-up comment, please? Mr. Matibi, you protest too much. The foundation of my question was really an answer to a parliamentary question by the Minister of Justice.
Oh, I see.
In which he said that you are not making use of any security.
Oh.
So you can have a look at it. So your mouth is to rest.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate that, Honourable Breitenbach. Thank you.
Yes, no. Don't protest too much. No, thank you very much for this, and thank you to the SIU. I think I speak on behalf of all the members of the committee when I commend the work that you do. Obviously, we will always have to raise issues that when we believe that those issues, the public need clarity. We gave you the latitude even now to elaborate because you are not answering to us, but your answers, I think the public out there has an interest in knowing the answers and the questions that have been asked. So that is why we gave you a space to really elaborate on the answers that you on the questions that have been asked to you. We will be seeing you, I think, when you present your annual report. I think we will have another discussion to take forward some of the questions, some of the areas that we have been able to identify. We will be partnering with yourselves to ensure that our people out there are being served. That is the main goal. A partnering does not mean that there will be no robust oversight. There has to be robust oversight because we want our people to receive the best services. So thank you very much, colleagues. I know that NPA will be next, and you need to go and eat. The food is outside, I'm advised. We will meet at 2:10. Thank you. One minute with a comment.
Thank you. So basically, they have led to whatever comes in this house.
How the fuck do you do that? I'm going. Thank you.
question, just to summarize more of the information for how you watch it and you like to take notes.
What about your
exactly? Thank you very much.
What does
thank you exactly? So I said, cool, but it means my more contextual interrogative piece is pushed down the page in favor of what is effectively a right of the time. That's it. Julian, on the other hand, said, good point, I'm going to read your story on the page. That's the difference between Julian and Jack.
You're ready for tomorrow's panel. Did you see the presentation?
Register.